We'll now hear another take on this case. Nelson against Welch. Why don't you sit over there? We won't make Mr. Terrace do a quadrille here.
Mr. Bell. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The reason that we are here today is because we believe that there was an abuse of discretion below. I consider that an extraordinary burden for us as appellants, and I don't take it lightly.
Well, actually, there is an antecedent question, which is whether we have appellate jurisdiction. The order in this case is an order remanding proceedings to state court, and 28 U.S.C. 1447D says that no such order shall be reviewable by appeal or otherwise. So how are we here?
There is an exception to that rule, which I regret to say to Your Honor that I can't now quote it to you, but I do know that under circumstances in which the removal was made to the court and the court had jurisdiction and then the court dismissed, that there are circumstances such as those here, but I can't.
Well, that's what you say. I understand. Are you aware that this question is before the Supreme Court right now?
Once again, Your Honor, I regret to say no.
The Federal Circuit recently held that there's no appellate jurisdiction in a case that is absolutely identical to this one. And the Supreme Court granted certiorari. There's a conflict among the circuits. The grant of certiorari is in a case called Carlsbad Industries, I think. Yeah, Carlsbad Technology against HIF Bio. Cert was granted October 14. So we need to know what to do here. Perhaps the parties will favor us with supplemental memoranda on appellate jurisdiction. There are really two questions. One, should we hold this for Carlsbad? The Federal Circuit said it was going into conflict with, among other courts, the Seventh Circuit, implying that our law is in favor of appellate jurisdiction here. But we really need to know whether we should wait for Carlsbad, to know whether we should agree with the Federal Circuit in Carlsbad.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, if I'm not familiar with the case and you are, and you say that it is identical, then I would urge the court to wait, because it would seem that if Carlsbad is going to decide this case,
you can only lose by waiting. Well, if, as the Federal Circuit says, current Seventh Circuit law allows an appeal in a case like this, the only thing that can happen from your perspective is that you'll be worse off. Now, maybe you're a very generous person who is.
I don't think it's a question of generosity, Your Honor. I am interested in the law, and if the Supreme Court is going to, in effect, reverse this case, then that's why I urge waiting. It's not a result I want. It's the result I think.
Since this is taking you by surprise, I will give each side 14 days to file supplemental briefs on appellate jurisdiction and the relation between this case and Carlsbad Technology.
Would Your Honor want me to continue with this argument?
Please. Your only chance.
Thank you, Your Honor. As I was saying, the abuse of discretion standard which we're addressing arises because of our belief that the opinion of the district court was arbitrary when two separate opinions were granted, but issued, but 2 months apart, and have vast differences with no real changes occurring between those two opinions. By way of example only, the earliest of those orders in December of 07 said that the central focus of the complaint was the bankruptcy action, that the substance of the complaint was involved the bankruptcy action, that it could only exist within the context of the bankruptcy proceeding, that the case is firmly within the arising jurisdiction, that the allegations go to the very integrity of the bankruptcy process, and then 2 months later said And again, there was no change in what was before the court, said that the claims predicated on defendant's participation have been eliminated, and the bankruptcy process have been eliminated, and therefore asked for briefs on the issue as to whether or not these state court claims should be sent back. Now, and while I say that nothing changed, and I stand firmly by that, the truth is that what generated the second opinion of the district court was the opinion of Judge St. Eve, who heard the appeal from the bankruptcy case in which she made this finding that Your Honor had discussion about related to bad faith. And somehow or another, even though that same opinion had existed before, as it exists even to this day, the district court somehow made the jump to the conclusion, I might say, that that made a difference when, in fact, the state of the record was the same as it was before. The bankruptcy judgment had not changed in any way. Because there a look at the first amended complaint in this case, which is the complaint that really we're talking about, is rather artfully pled in terms of state court claims, but it is quite clearly entangled, so entangled in the bankruptcy process that that it's impossible to tell what is truly state court and what is truly federal. And I think based on the time, I should hold off until my rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Lappel. Mr. Terrace.
Thank you, Your Honors, for granting us time to file some supplemental papers on the question of jurisdiction. I won't address that for that reason. I think what is essentially before the court, assuming it has jurisdiction, is who will decide a motion to dismiss that was not decided by the district court in this case, the Circuit Court of Cook County or the district court. The state of the pleadings in this case is, whether artful or inartful, not complete. Mr. Nelson has not appealed Judge Kokoris's ruling. Issues arising in the context of the bankruptcy no longer exist in this case. Whether Mr. Nelson can plead and prove a valid state law cause of action that does not offend the doctrine of preemption, that does not offend at least the district court's view of the effect of the judgment we just discussed in the previous argument, is an open question. The state of those pleadings, which Mr. Lappel finds inextricably intertwined with the bankruptcy, is not entirely Mr. Nelson's fault. In fact, as we point out, the defendant in this case might have sought a more definite statement, might have compelled a second amended complaint. But that is not the procedural posture at which this case happens to be, and that certainly was a strategic move by the defendants in their attempt to have the district court conclude that this entire litigation was in fact preempted. Therefore,
Mr. Terrace, why didn't you appeal the district court's order?
Because we didn't think we had sufficient grounds to do so. But we do believe.
What I don't understand is why you have attempted to appeal the no bad faith finding in the first case, where it doesn't have any effect on the outcome, and have not attempted to appeal that finding in the second case, where it did.
I'm not confident that Mr. Nelson is able to state a claim outside of the bankruptcy court.
I'm not asking about stating a claim. I'm asking why you failed to appeal. Judge Kokoris said, I'm going to give issue preclusive effect to Judge Schmetterer's declaration. Right? Now, a logical ground of appeal is whether or not Judge Schmetterer was correct. Issue preclusion applies only to issues that are actually and necessarily decided. And since everyone agrees that what Judge Schmetterer said was not necessary to the order dismissing the bankruptcy proceeding, under standard doctrine of issue preclusion, there is no preclusive effect.
Correct. But
so why didn't you appeal to make that argument?
But that ruling by Judge Koukouras does not reach the question of preemption. It makes no difference whether or not that finding should properly preclude this issue if, in fact, the cause of action relating to the bankruptcy is preempted. It cannot be brought outside the context of the bankruptcy court.
You're losing me. Preemption is not a ground for removal in the first place, right? So if all we have here is a claim of preemption, there was never any federal jurisdiction of this suit. It should always have been back in the district court. And, of course, if that's true, under 1447D, an appeal is impermissible no matter how Carlsbad comes out.
Well, in this case,
seems to be arguing that.
The question is there jurisdiction under the bankruptcy section? I think it's 1452.
I think we're talking past one another, Mr. Terrace. Why don't you proceed?
In any event, the state of the pleadings is in part because the standards of Rule 12 were not met by the defendants and done so for the strategic reason of attempting to secure a complete dismissal of this action.
Could you raise your voice, please?
Sorry, I'll stand closer as well. This case is simply one of three courts, I suppose, is going to decide the question of whether or not there's a hypothetical set of facts within the bounds of elimination of the bankruptcy, anything in the bankruptcy context that Mr. Nelson can state against these defendants. And that's either going to be this court, which I suggest is highly inappropriate because of the state of the pleadings, the circuit court, which appropriately can address that, or the district court, which has made a finding which may or may not be reviewable on appeal. We suggest that it is not. And I think that the state law claims should remain in the court in which they were originally brought, and it can appropriately deal with them, even in the context of Judge Koukouras' order. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Terrace. Anything further, Mr. Lupel?
May I?
Thank you. I would like to point out the thrust of this case, and as Your Honor said, we will brief the appealability issues and deal with Carlsbad. But the issue to us was whether or not this court should, whether or not this case should go back to the state court. And when one reads the complaint, as I was starting to say before, the complaint in this case as to whether or not it should go back, it has 24 references either to bankruptcy or Chapter 11. And when the case was originally before the district court on the motion to remand, the appellee in this case said that there were no federal claims in it, and that's why it should go back to the state court. Later, when Judge Koukouras ruled the way he did, they said, well, it will be easy for the state court to discern which of these claims are federal and which of these are state. Really a complete change of or opposite position, and the point being that if a state court has this case, they're going to need virtually the entire bankruptcy record in order to be able to determine what's a state claim, if any, and what is a federal claim. And so for that reason, we ask the court to reverse. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. We look forward to the supplemental memos, but I think in light of the last few minutes of the oral argument, the supplemental memos really ought to be more extensive. I think they are going to need to address the question whether there was ever federal jurisdiction in this case, that is, whether the removal was proper in the first place. And that not only entails the question whether there was ever here anything more than potential federal preemption, which is not a ground of removal, but an issue that the parties' briefs in this court have never mentioned, which is whether there's diversity of citizenship. because if I understand the notice of removal, it alleged diversity of citizenship. That would be a source of federal jurisdiction independent of any of this, and it would, of course, make the remand completely inappropriate because you can't remand under the supplemental jurisdiction claims over which there's original federal jurisdiction. Now, oddly, I don't understand why that hasn't been addressed here, but I think it ought to be covered in the supplemental memos. The case is taken under advisement. Our next